Hello, Germany. Lemmy from Motorhead here, and you're listening to Zundfunk, which is a fine radio station, as everybody knows. And you should listen to it all the time until the day you die, and never listen to anything else at all, okay?
The history of rock and roll, as told in our radio show, Teil 4, Die fetten Jahre. Sendung von Michael Bartle. Produktion Rainer Schaller. Und Mick Fleetwood von Fleetwood Mac.
I learned that a long time ago. In order to be in this business, if you're a woman, you had to be very feminine, very quiet. If they ask you to do something, great. If they did not, don't offer. Because if you even offer, they instantly go, you know. I was at a recording session with Tom Petty once, who happens to be probably my dearest man friend. And I said to him, in front of all the Heartbreakers, did you ever think about going out, making this song go out on the chorus chords instead of the verse chords? And he turned around to me and he said, you are here on a limited pass. And that was the last time I ever, ever said anything in anybody's session.
I don't want young people to think it was cool, because it wasn't. It was a drag, and it's gone. And I'm very happy that it is gone, you know. It was killing me. You know, unless you really face the truth that you are really in danger of maybe even losing your life. Emotionally, my life was a mess. It was killing me. She hit a brick wall. I think she liked me, in fact, quite a while before me.
Stevie ist praktisch durch die Wand gegangen. Sie hat eine ganze Zeit vor mir erkannt, dass sie das nicht überlebt, emotional und auch körperlich. Aber du änderst daran nichts, solange du es nicht wirklich willst. Man redet sich ja bis zum Schluss ein, ach, mir geht's doch gut. Und das ist eine Lüge. Du musst erst erkennen, dass du in Gefahr bist, dass du vielleicht demnächst dein Leben verlieren wirst. Ich war jedenfalls ein Wrack. Ich wusste gar nicht, was eine Beziehung ist. Meine Beziehung, das war die mit meinem Lifestyle, meiner Art zu leben. Und das war nicht gut. Du kannst dann auch nicht mehr reisen. Und ich war nicht mal in dem Sinne süchtig, dass ich immer gebibbert hätte, ich brauche jetzt was. Aber ich habe regelmäßig Kokain geschnupft. Insofern war ich schon süchtig. Ich war ständig besoffen. Du konntest den Brandy an mir riechen. Und dann bin ich raus aus dem Zimmer. Und wenn ich zurückkam, konntest du genau sagen, ah ja, jetzt hat er sich wieder was gegeben. Ich war total high. Das ging immer auf und ab.
It was like up and down. I still have moments when I go, oh no, that was me.
Howard Marks, genannt Mr. Nice, Mann für die Drogen.
It was a very gradual process. It started with my smoking my first joint, which was when I was in Oxford University, so we have to blame Oxford for it. And I was about 19 years old. I smoked a joint, I liked it very much, so I smoked another one, and another one, and another one. And ended up not being able to afford as much as I wanted. So I started being a dealer. Then a bigger dealer, and then eventually a very big dealer. At the time, this is in the 70s, British bands were very popular, and very popular in America too. So they would go on tour in America, and the fashion was to take a tremendous amount of equipment. There'd be container loads full of synthesizers, amplifiers, everything. And I knew the roadies, and so I made a proposition with them. And because it was only temporary importation, it wasn't going through a heavy customs thing. So, but the bands didn't know themselves.
Who were the bands?
Pink Floyd, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Eric Clapton, Genesis.
And you stepped even further? You invented bands that were not even playing.
That's right, yes, because we suddenly realized there was no need, really, to find a band that was on tour, a real band. We could just say there was a band on tour. And there's a book by William Burroughs called Naked Lunch where he uses the name Laughing Grass in it. So stupidly we called it that, you know, provocatively.
Remember when you were young? You shone like the sun.
Roger Waters von Pink Floyd im Jahr 2016 über The Wall.
It's probably the most important of the works that we did together, I would say.
Und Flüchtlingspolitik.
You know, there's something else I need to say about Germany, because it's in my mind now. And that is, I was listening to the radio, and there was an interview with a Syrian refugee.
Im Radio habe ich ein Interview mit einem syrischen Flüchtling gehört. Er hat vor Dankbarkeit geweint und alle Deutschen als Engel bezeichnet. Für ihn war es, als ob er den Heiligen Gral erreicht hätte. Er wurde aufgenommen, seine Kinder bekamen neue Kleider. Er hat die Chance bekommen, vielleicht wieder ein angemessenes Leben führen zu können. Und diese Story hat sich hier in den Ätherwellen verbreitet. Der Rest der Welt ist tief beeindruckt.
The world is deeply impressed. We, the colonial powers, the UK, France, Germany, Holland,
all die ehemaligen Kolonialherren, Briten, Deutsche, Franzosen, Holländer, Spanier, wir alle repräsentieren nun mal die Länder, die diese Kolonien ruiniert haben. Deshalb sollten wir nicht überrascht sein, dass nun eine Welle von Leuten zu uns kommt, denen keine Alternative geblieben ist. Sie müssen es fern der Heimat versuchen, weil sie sonst draufgehen würden. Und das ist nicht ihre Schuld. Es ist unsere Schuld. Es ist eben auch das Erbe der Kolonialzeit und des Imperialismus. Deswegen ist es unsere Verantwortung, uns jetzt zusammenzureißen.
People should start to try and remember, if they can, the years between 1961 and 1989.
Diese Leute sollten anfangen, sich an die Jahre zwischen 1961 und 1989 zu erinnern, wenn sie alt genug sind. Damals hattet ihr die Berliner Mauer und wir wissen, was mit ihr verbunden war. Insofern ist es politisch absurd, nun wieder über Festungen nachzudenken, nur um damit arme Menschen draußen zu halten. Und wenn man das trotzdem versucht, begibt man sich in eine sehr schwierige und moralisch angreifbare Lage. Denn die Zeit von Festungen ist eigentlich seit dem Mittelalter vorbei und sollte nicht wiederkommen.
Because the idea of fortresses went out with the Dark Ages and it should never be reintroduced. When my school kids that I have playing at every show that I have come on stage, it is not by accident that they wear T-shirts that say "Fear builds walls" on the front of them. So we need to learn to control our fears. and to think of alternatives.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom.
Don Henley von den Eagles über Hotels und California.
Hotel California more or less just introduces a lot of ideas without necessarily, you know, saying, elaborating on them, you know, and then each of the songs that follows, you know, goes into other things that are suggested in the song. But the song Hotel California is basically a song about the transition from the late 1960s into the 70s. It's like there was a big peace and love movement in the late 60s that has since moved into what we call the decadent or apathetic 70s. And this song more or less talks about the transition from one kind of youth culture to another and from one way of thinking about things to another. I think California is the vanguard, the leader, at the forefront of cultural things in the world. You know what I mean? Everything is happening out there a little earlier than it happens everywhere else. There's a lot of extremes in Los Angeles. A great deal of the music industry has moved from New York to California. There's a great migration west in the United States. It seems that, you know, people are always moving west. In Los Angeles, people are interested in songwriters, people are interested in melodies, people are interested in good singing, and they're not quite so interested in glitter and blood and guts and smoke bombs and punks and all of the things that to me are just an attitude, you know what I mean, as opposed to being a musical statement. It's just that a lot of people, they just get dressed up and go on stage and act like weirdos, and they think that that makes them something new and something special. But in Los Angeles, I think everyone likes songs.
Giorgio Moroder.
Was Sie jetzt hören, ist nicht meine Stimme. Es ist ein Vocoder.
Was Sie jetzt gehört haben, war ein Vocoder.
Vanessa May hätte vielleicht gesungen.
At night I wake up with the sheets soaking wet and a freight train running through the middle of my head. Only you can cool my desire.
Bruce was signed in 1972, and I started working with him in 1974, first as a producer on Born to Run, and then eventually as a manager.
John Landau, manager and producer von Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, gosh. Some of our biggest disagreements have been on the song's final song selection, as you can well imagine. First of all, Bruce, you know, at the point that he loses interest in something, he's not going to put additional work into it if he's already decided in his head, I don't need that for this album. So at the end, you're dealing with songs that are ready to be mixed. You know, the playing field has narrowed.
John Landau, Springsteen producer, zur Frage, warum sie den Song Because the Night Patti Smith geschenkt haben.
Because the Night, it never became part of the final discussion because it was abandoned in much earlier state. We all knew, Bruce knew, that it was a hit song and a great song, but we'd already said our goodbyes to it. it was gone. And certainly after he gave it to our dear friend Jimmy Iovine and Patti Smith, who did such a great job with it. It was an interesting moment the first time I heard that on pop radio, Patti's version, and it sounded great on the radio. And I said, oh, boy. Well, good for her. I wish we had it, but at least it went to such a great person. Didn't win any awards. It was not that well received, broadly speaking. It didn't have any hits. We didn't have any hits. We gave them all away. You can see the complete absence of the nature of the fierce ambition that's on display is all about one thing, which is what Bruce said. It wasn't about fame. It wasn't about money. It was about being great. It was not that any of us were disinterested in any of those other things. But the priority was we all thought, let's be great. Other good things will happen if you're great. But first, that's what it's all about.
John Landau über das Album Born to Run und Springsteen als Stimme der Abgehängten.
I think he was very interested in finding his own voice in connection with the voice of parts of the country that go unheard, of merging his voice with the voice of people whose voices are not taken into account by society, official society. So the song Factory, for example, which he talks about how it originated with his father who worked in a factory and who lost his hearing in a factory and tried to encapsulate something about that experience, you know, which I think in 2.5 minutes he does an extraordinary thing there.
Early in the morning, I knew that could be a sound of the future, but I didn't realize how much the impact would be. My name is Giovanni Giorgio, but everybody calls me Giorgio.
Harold Faltermeier.
Die Ideen, die er hatte und wie er dann daraus Platten gemacht hat, das war einfach schlichtweg genial. Ich meine, Giorgio war der allererste, der sich mit zwei Revox-Bandmaschinen in einer Küche verschanzt hat und da wochenlang ein Stück aufs andere überspielt hat und hin und zurück und hat dann plötzlich dieses Multitracking da irgendwo mitgeprägt auch. Und der Trommler, muss man sich mal vorstellen, der Trommler, der Keith Forsey, der musste dort live trommeln, während wir gemischt haben, die Synthesizer eingespielt haben, teilweise noch, ja. Und das wurde alles aufgenommen, direct to tape, ja, also zu einem Digitalmaster. Damals mit einem unglaublichen Aufwand, ja. Gab ja noch keine Sequencer, keine richtig funktionierenden. Das war damals die Welt der Microcomposer und solchen Sachen. Und das ist ja alles noch nicht dynamisch gewesen. Das war ja, also, unvorstellbar. Und das hat er sich in den Kopf gesetzt gehabt. Das Ding muss einfach gemacht werden. Er will die Pioniersarbeit leisten in der digitalen Aufnahme, ja, für Popmusik. Und das war eine Revolution, auch für unser ganzes Hören und alles drum und dran. Und die Computer waren so groß wie eine Waschmaschinenanlage in München. Solche Dinger waren das damals noch. Ja. Das war Pioniersgeist. Der Disco-Sound hat einen ganz klaren Parameter gehabt. Es war im oberen Bereich nichts, was störte. Es lief alles irgendwie sehr im unteren Bereich ab, in der Bass-Schlagzeug-Struktur. Und oben hat man halt ein paar Geigen gehabt, irgend sowas, die halt dann irgendwelche Riffs und so Bläsersätze oder sonstiges spielten. Ja. Aber generell ist die Disco-Musik ja auch mit allem, was hinterher an tanzbarer Musik, an Dance-Musik gelaufen ist, immer in irgendeiner Art und Weise vergleichbar gewesen. Es war Business, gar keine Frage. Also es war kein Hobby. Ja. Das Herz des Musikers wurde bei der Disco-Zeit sicherlich nicht in den Vordergrund gestellt. Ja. Der George hat zum Beispiel generell, wenn er nur ein paar Spuren gebraucht hat, die Tom-Tom-Spuren von Keith gelöscht. Weil das war ihm vollkommen wurscht, ob da einer Tom-Toms gespielt hat oder nicht. Und wenn man darüber gemeckert hat, sagt er, ich habe gestern Nacht zwei Spuren gebraucht und ich hatte keine. Habe sie einfach gelöscht, das war ihm wurscht. Ja. Das Wesentliche war die Four- und die Floor-Bass-Drum und die Snare und die Hi-Hat.
Reinhold Mack von den Musicland Studios.
Giorgio hat meistens einen guten Riecher. Nächste Flugzeug, Ticket gekauft, also alles, was ich noch in den Taschen hatte und auf die Karte gesetzt. Damals war es noch Riem, raus aus dem Flugzeug, ins Arabella, Treppen runter. Tür geht auf, 10 Menschen kommen runter, vorneweg Freddy in Ballerinen, Hawaii-Hemd, Hawaii-Shorts und sagt, Darling, what are you doing here? Und ich habe gesagt, ja, thought I should be doing this. Und er sagt, tja, eigentlich nicht, aber wenn du schon da bist, warum eigentlich nicht? Können wir doch machen, klar. Wo kann man hier Bier trinken? Und ich sage, na, unten im Chinesenturm. Dann waren wir gleich runtergefahren und immer so 10, 15 Mann hinterher, Bodyguards. Wir gehen durch den englischen Garten durch, alles voll wie immer, es war schön Wetter. Und ich, Freddy, hat sich untergehakt bei mir und mir war es dann doch etwas peinlich, weil ich kannte es noch nicht so recht. Ich war dann also noch ziemlich an Kur eigentlich. Aber ich bin mit ihm durch, wir haben uns hingesetzt, haben Bier getrunken, ging dann wieder zurück. Und dann hat er eben die Gitarre genommen und sagt, mach dir keine Sorgen, ich kann eh nicht Gitarre spielen, aber ein bisschen geht immer. Er nimmt es und Brian May war noch nicht da und er sagt, mach schnell, bevor Brian kommt, der macht alles kaputt, dann dauert es wieder 5 Jahre, bis was fertig ist. Und auch gleich gesungen und es war eigentlich nach 6 Stunden stand das ganze Ding, ich meine, sind ja auch Profis. Und dann, ja, wann kommt Brian? Ja, Brian kommt morgen. Ja, ich sag dir gleich, was er sagen wird. I don't like it. Und Brian kam rein nächsten Tag, sagt, we've done something. I Don't Like It.
Aber trotzdem ein Hit.
Es ging ganz gut ab und das war das erste und das zweite war Another One Bites the Dust. Das Einzige, was da war, war das Bassriff. Also das Bom, 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 da, 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 da. Das war das Einzige, was Herr Dieten hatte. Und den Titel, Another One Bites the Dust. Und das war natürlich etwas wenig. Jetzt haben wir das alles so hintereinander geschnitten. Und diplomatischerweise konnte man natürlich nicht eine Gitarre spielen oder ein Klavier. Oder dadurch kamen die komischen Geräusche, also wie so eine Rückwärtseinblendung von dem Klavierakkord, um eben darzustellen, das ist ein Placeholder, einfach eine Platzkarte. Da müsste es dann weitergehen, wenn das aufhört. Und das war einfach nur reine Diplomatie, da wenn wir eigentlich sonst die Hände gebunden waren, weil natürlich immer Stress ist, wenn ein Instrument von jemand anders gespielt wird. Wie zum Beispiel bei Princes of the Universe ist eine Gitarre drauf, die Stefan gemacht hat. Und Brian May hat versucht, eine Woche lang, glaube ich, das nachzuahmen. Konnte natürlich nicht, weil wir haben das technisch gemacht. Und ich habe halt praktisch nur einen Harmonizer runternudeln lassen, eine Oktave. Und das hat keiner rausgekriegt, aber es ist halt einfach klasse. Für mich klingt das immer noch gut. Zumindest zu der Zeit war es also unglaublich. Das ist nicht Ruß, das heißt Grüß Gott. Eine sehr simple Erklärung, also wie das Lied, es gab es ja nicht. Ich meine, man muss natürlich sagen, ELO, Queen, ist wie Flensburg und Altötting. Also es ist ein wahnsinniger Unterschied. Einen sind freudig und unterstützen einen mit Ideen und der andere ist ein ganz miserabler Mensch, der also schlecht gelaunt, jeder Engländer ist schlecht gelaunt morgens. Spätestens nach 10, so nach 14 Bieren sitzt er auf dem Schoß, küssen einen ab und sagen, dass man der Beste ist. Am nächsten Tag kennt man sich wieder nicht und dann wird wieder von vorne angefangen. Das über die Monate zermürbt einen das ein bisschen, aber man gewöhnt sich auch dran, dass man überhaupt nicht mehr hinguckt.
War das jetzt ELO oder Queen?
Das war ELO. Die anderen haben ja irgendwie eine ganz andere Bildungsstufe. Also gut, Don't Bring Me Down. Man baut Schicht um Schicht drauf und es wird halt immer voller. Und dann kam man eben zu dem Punkt, ja, man bräuchte vielleicht auch irgendwie ein paar Worte dazu. Ne, ich sagte, ja gut, dann sag halt, weil es stand die Tour an, dass wir nach Australien gingen, um eine Welttour anzufangen. Und Down Under, Don't Bring Me Down, Bruce. Bruce ist das der übliche Bezeichnung von Australier. Dann habe ich gesagt, na, sag halt Grüß Gott, also so Gruß. Und dann haben wir eben Gruß eingesetzt. Und das ist, seither ist es halt Don't Bring Me Down, Gruß.
Meyer von Yellow über die Gründung der Band.
Zusammengekommen sind wir tatsächlich wegen meiner allerersten Platte, diese Cry for Fame, die hat der Blank gehört, geht dann in diesen Plattenladen, das war auch mein Produzent, sagt du, aber wenn du da sowas machst, das ist ja wirklich also nicht so doll, was der Meyer da macht, hör dir mal meine Sachen an, ich bin viel besser. Ja, tatsächlich war er das natürlich, hat eine ganze Kiste voll gehabt mit Tapes. Er war Lastwagenfahrer vom Beruf, Boris, also um sein Brot zu verdienen. Und jeden Abend hat er sich geflüchtet da in sein Studio und jeden Abend hat er ein Stück gemacht. Er hat also dann am anderen Tag in seinem Lastwagen sich angehört hat und dann hat er es in diesen Koffer geschmissen. Er hat also 1000 Musikstücke gehabt, bevor er überhaupt zum ersten Mal irgendjemandem etwas zum Hören gegeben hat. Ja, und ich war total begeistert von diesen Stücken. Dieser Mann hat dann eben uns zusammengebracht, hat gesagt, wenn zu blank, wenn du was machen willst, musst du diese eigenartige Stimme da von diesem Meier nehmen, nicht? Und das hat ihm eigentlich gar nicht so gepasst, in Blank, weil Blank hat das so gesehen, als würde jemand in seine Bilder hineinmalen, nicht? Wie jeder Artist ist er natürlich ein Egomane, der nicht will, dass man ihn da und seine Kreise irgendwie stört. Und das hat immer wieder auch zu Spannungen geführt am Anfang, weil er dachte, was soll das, diese Stimme? Und muss ich diese Kröte fressen? An sich bin ich doch ein großer Musiker.
Diese Kröte mit Schnauzbart.
Ja, die Kröte mit Schnauzbart, genau.
Standing at the machine every day for all my life. I used to do it and I needed it. It's the only thing I want is just to rush. Push. Cash.
Curtis Blow.
Clap your hands, everybody, if you got what it takes. 'Cause I'm Curtis Blow, and I want you to know that these are the breaks. Breaks on a bus, breaks on a car, breaks to make you a superstar. Breaks to win and breaks to lose. But these here breaks rock your shoes, and these are the breaks. Break it up, break it up, break it up.
From miles around, miles away, you can smell the food.
Das Essen konntest du schon meilenweit riechen, die Musik der Blockparty schon hören, obwohl du noch einen Kilometer weit davon entfernt warst. Du hast dir gedacht, oh, jemand spielt Musik im Block. Und dann hast du die Quelle gesucht. Die Musik wurde immer lauter und lauter, je näher du dich rangepirscht hast. Du hast die Energie gespürt, einfach den ganzen Vibe einer Blockparty. Wir haben uns Polizeibarrikaden gekrallt, sie ans Ende der Straße gestellt und die DJs haben währenddessen ihre Anlagen an die Straßenlaternen angeschlossen. Die Straßenlaternen waren am Boden nämlich ganz einfach zu knacken, einfach mit einer Münze aufschrauben. Und dann konntest du für deine Anlage einfach den Strom der Straßenlaternen abzapfen. So hatten wir Strom, umsonst, von der Stadt, danke. Als die Musik dann lief, und das war das Unglaubliche, strömten die Leute aus ihren Häusern, hatten eine Wahnsinnszeit oder hingen an ihren Fenstern und hörten der Musik zu. Das war einfach ein gutes Gefühl. Irgendwann fingen wir an, Grills auf der Straße aufzustellen und direkt auf der Blockparty Essen zu kochen. Der Duft verbreitete sich meilenweit und wenn du das Essen gerochen hast, hieß es nur, auf geht's, jemand schmeißt eine Blockparty.
Somebody's having a Blockparty.
Somebody say, all right. Say ho. You don't stop, I keep on. Somebody scream. Break down. Breaks on the stage, breaks on the screen. Breaks to make your wallet lean. Breaks run cold and breaks run hot. Some folks got them and some have not. But these are the breaks. Break it up, break it up, break it up, break down.
Martin Al Gore über die Anfänge von Depeche Mode.
1981 was the last time we did anything together, the only time we did anything together, really. Yeah, that was the only album that was released by us. I received an email from Vince that was very short and to the point that said, "Hi, I'm thinking of making a techno album. Are you interested in collaborating? There are no deadlines or pressures. Could be fun. What do you think?" So I thought about it for a little while and then responded to him and said, "Sounds like a good idea. Let's have a go." I think that we definitely would not have got the break that we did without Vince because, you know, he was the driving force in the band at that point. He was the one writing the majority of the songs. He was the one who was really driven, I think, to succeed, you know, more than the rest of us.
You're like an angel.
Anthony Kiedis, Sänger der Red Hot Chili Peppers.
We decided that, you know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers were meant to continue. And at that point in time, we were blessed with a gift from outer space, who was John Frusciante. You know, we didn't have to look, we didn't have to search. He was just presented to us, you know, like an offering from the gods, you know, because he had been living his life as a Red Hot Chili Pepper the whole time we were playing. You know, as far as he was concerned, he was a member of the band, even though we didn't know him. You know, he knew everything about us. He knew more about us than we knew about ourselves. And he was such a dedicated musician that when he joined the band, it was perfect.
John Frusciante von den Red Hot Chili Peppers.
There's no show-off shit. Everything's being done to make the other guy sound good. And it was recorded underwater. It was recorded in a house on Laurel Canyon. But see, that house was also located in the fourth dimension. And our cosmic creative juices were flowing so heavily that they just poured out and went up to the ceiling. And ghosts would dance around in it. And we felt we could breathe much easier underwater. And the rest of the world didn't even exist when we were making this record. The last album was very much a struggle. It was like, let's really make a great record. We really got to make a great record. Do it. Now.
And it sounded kind of like this when we were making Mother's Milk. It sounded like, and then when we made Blood Sugar Sex Magic, it sounded like,
Jimi Hendrix more is an inspiration spiritually and emotionally, and that's the difference between the way I hear what he does and the way that people who think that it's his technique that had to be expounded on, because I don't think it can go any further.
John Frusciante von den Red Hot Chili Peppers.
You know, to me, Jimi Hendrix, from there, people could only go sideways. You can't go forward from where he was, because he was it, you know, and from there everything had to move sideways. And I prefer to be inspired by things, by the seriousness of the spirituality that underlies them, and not the actual riffs or not the actual technique of what he's doing. It's more just the spirit of just beating the shit out of my guitar, but it's all just putting everything you've got into every note, you know. Every note just has to be right there.
And she slams the door in his drunken face. And now he stands outside, and all the neighbors start to gossip and drool. He cries, oh girl, you must be mad.
What happened to the sweet love you and me had? Against the door he leans and starts a scene, and his tears fall and burn a garden green. And so castles made of sand fall in the sea eventually.
John Frusciante von den Red Hot Chili Peppers.
It's the most powerful feeling in the world. For me not to be playing the guitar so much as crawling inside of Flea's bass line, you know? I dropped out of school when I was 16. I knew that I'd rather starve my whole life and at least be a guitar player than, like, you know, have a boss at some job that I didn't respect at all. So for the couple of years after I quit school and moved out of my parents' house, I just sort of stumbled around Hollywood and just hung out, jammed with people. My life before that was just sitting in my bedroom practicing all the time, because I grew up in a really boring place in Los Angeles called the Valley, the San Fernando Valley. Just the blandest place probably on the face of the earth. And the most exciting thing for me at that time was just to sit in my room and play guitar 15 hours a day, you know. That was just all I did. Well, punk rock was what sent me off in the direction that I got sent into when I was 9 years old. When I was 9 years old, I bought the Germs album G.I., which I think is the best punk rock album ever made. And all of a sudden, I realized that the fact that kids never liked me and always made fun of me at school, and that teachers always tried to put down every single creative thing that I had to say, the fact that, you know, I wasn't getting along with my mother, all of a sudden I realized that those things were positive things, that those were things that made me special. All of a sudden I realized that could be my strength. Punk rock really gave me a home, and from there was where everything else stemmed from, you know, but that was the seed. And so therefore it's very important in my heart, even though people started misunderstanding the spirit of punk rock once the media got a hold of it. I don't believe that it will ever die. I think it's just everything to me. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
For Blood Sugar Sex Magik? No, Rick Rubin was the producer. But, you know, we didn't choose him, and he didn't choose us. We just found each other. You know, we were thinking, you know, should we produce this record ourselves? Should we get a producer? You know, should we let an alligator produce the record? Should we let the moon produce the record? And then we met Rick, and then we just spent some time hanging out with him, and we got a great feeling from him. You know, he's the bearded wonder of the world. Rick Rubin has so much diversity in his past, and his mind is so open to the present that, you know, he didn't have any preconceived notions of trying to change the Red Hot Chili Peppers into anything other than what they were. He just wanted to let us be. He wanted to, you know, suck the best out of us and, you know, spit it out on the tape, which is what he did. You know, a lot of producers have this egotistical attitude that they have to stamp themselves onto the band, otherwise they're not doing their job. But he did his job without having to include his ego. And he's very intelligent, and less is more, and sometimes the best thing that he would have to do would be to take something away instead of add something. You know, he could remove a stroke, or he could remove a note, and he just made us really relaxed, you know, and relaxation is the key to creative expression, because the more relaxed you are, the more freely everything can flow through you. And as a singer, it's very important for me to trust my producer to the point where I could sing anything in front of him, even if it involved making a fool out of myself. I knew he wasn't going to judge me, and that's very important for me. You know, it's like when Jimi Hendrix would record vocals in a studio, he would never look at anybody, and he would close his eyes, and he'd go into a very dark room, and that's the only way that he could relax enough to, you know, sing. And that's how Rick made me feel.
This is Johnny Cash on Sundfunk in Munich. It's nice to be with you. So I get along very well with Rick Rubin, but the thing about it is, Rick wanted to hear what I personally had to offer at this point in my life. He thought I had more to offer than he had heard on record and knew my work pretty well. And as it turned out, what he wanted to hear was me take my guitar and sing to him. And he turned on the recorder. And some of those songs in those very first sessions in his living room are on the album because they were really honest and emotional. I was just singing to that microphone, you know, like to one person. He was the only other person there. There was no engineer, just his dogs. And sometimes we'd have to stop and start over because the dogs would make a noise. It was like working with Sam Phillips at Sun Records in the 50s. And there was no clock on the wall, and nobody was counting money, you know? It was just trying to get the best out of me I had to offer. And I think it worked very well.
Melinda was mine till the time that I found her, holding Jim and loving him. Then Sue came along, loved me strong, that's what I thought. Me and Sue, but that died too. Don't know that I will, but until I can find me a girl who'll stay and won't play games behind me, I'll be what I am, a solitary man, solitary man.
This is the kind of album I've always wanted to do. I talked about doing this album 25 years ago. I talked to Marty Robbins about it. He was a very good friend of mine. I even had a title, Johnny Cash Alone, or Late and Alone, where I would take my guitar and sing songs like as if it's just me and my guitar singing to you. It's that personal. You know, that's the thing I wanted. I wanted to for people to feel like that I just recorded this album for them, them alone, you know. I sing a lot of songs that you could call American folk songs and story songs. The underdog, the down and out, you know. It's part of American culture, but still I'm no ambassador. I'm here to sing my songs and entertain. That's about it.
I went up to Memphis and I met Delia there. Found her in her parlor and I tied her to her chair. Delia's gone. One more round, Delia's gone. She was low down and trifling, and she was cold and mean. Kind of evil make me want to grab my submachine. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. First time I shot her, shot her in the side. Hard to watch her suffer, but with the second shot she died. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. But jailer, oh jailer, jailer, I can't sleep, cause all around my bedside I hear the patter of Delia's feet. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone.
Hi, this is Nana Cherry, and you are listening to Synth Funk. Don't give up. I miss dancing, you know, like when I don't dance and like hearing music on a serious sound system, you know, it's like, it can be like euphoric, it can be like a holy experience, like you can see the that hear victory, you know.
Looking good today, looking good in every way. No style key, you better watch, don't mess with me. No money man can win my love. It's sweetness that I'm thinking of. We always hang in a buffalo stance. We do the dive every time we dance. I give you love, baby, not
The History of Rock and Roll, as told in our radio show, Teil 4, Die fetten Jahre. Sendung von Michael Bartle, Produktion Rainer Schaller.
So thanks again, friends, for coming, and I hope you enjoy the music.